I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. New Bedford has a rich and varied history. In the 19th century, it was the richest city per capita in the world, thanks to the whaling industry, and continues to be America's number one fishing port. New Bedford is also known for a vibrant art scene and a host to a number of festivals. Like any urban area, it also struggles with crime, drugs, and how to promote business and economic growth. New Bedford's Mayor John Mitchell began his fourth term in January and joins us in studio to discuss what's on his agenda. Welcome back. Always good to see you.
It's great to be back, Mindy.
All right, so we also like to hear from listeners. If you have a question or a comment for Mayor Mitchell, give us a call, 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Bristol County Sheriff Hodgson gained national attention when he offered inmates to help build President Trump's border wall with Mexico. And the sheriff, has the Immigration and Customs Enforcement for the Bristol County Jail to become an ICE detainment facility. Did that back after the Bianco raid, I believe, and is cooperating with ICE to detain undocumented immigrants. I'm sure this is of concern to the immigrant community in New Bedford, home to one of the largest immigrant populations in the state. What are you hearing from community leaders and immigrants about this relationship with ICE? Does it concern them?
It has concerned them, but I have to say, you know, in the years since President Trump's election, it's died down. I think there was initially a surge of very understandable fear, given the rhetoric in the campaign and given the rhetoric not only from the White House but from others. And so that fear was palpable. We saw in certain of our schools a huge spike in absenteeism in December of 16, just in the wake of the election, among immigrant students. And in New Bedford, our largest undocumented population is ethnically Guatemalan, and it was primarily those students who absented themselves from school, and that's a population of students who come from very hardworking families and who stand out as exceedingly law abiding, but you know they and many of those kids excel in school, but they live an uncertain existence because of their immigration status. I can say though that in the years since, we haven't had thankfully we haven't had any ICE raids, we haven't had any heated rhetoric, at least beyond which we heard initially from the White House. So I can't say that things have died down entirely, but they're a little more stable in that community. What we try to do as a city government is to build trust all the time. Our goal with respect to that community, and really every community, is to put public safety first, and we've been very successful at that with a very precipitous drop in the crime rate in New Bedford. But when we deal with that immigrant community, we take pains not to raise the immigration issue. We try to build trust, and we've been pretty successful at that.
Okay, I know that's been the police chief's goal. He's tried to really build trust within the immigrant community, because we've had some issues where, as you mentioned, this community, coming, they don't trust banks, don't trust police, and carry cash, and people know this, and they're perfect targets for crime, and then they may not report them. And I know that's been on the police chief's agenda to gain that trust so that they do report crimes. And then, of course, when you have an immigrant community, you have domestic violence issues and things, and people are afraid to report them. Does the police chief feel like they've gained some ground in that area, that these crimes are being reported, that some of that fear has gone away, or is it still there?
Yeah, I think we've made progress, Mindy, in that area. It's hard, though. We have more Spanish-speaking police officers now. We have close working relationships with the leadership of our ethnically Mayan community, but it's not something that you can sort of take for granted. It requires constant vigilance and constant trust building and an open dialogue. But it works, and what we try to do is we eschew the heated rhetoric that that sometimes informs the national debate, and because in cities, that's just where the rubber hits the road. And so building trust and making everybody feel welcome is the name of the game in New Bedford.
New Bedford has a junior police academy. Tell us about that. What is that?
Well, I can't say that I've attended it many, but look, it's just it is in the same vein as the trust building efforts in the immigrant communities. We live in an America now in which trust in police departments has been called into question. New Bedford has a rich history of having a diverse police department, and one that that has not experienced sort of the strife that we've seen in places like Ferguson and New York City and other places that have been in the news. And toward that end, we have a citizens police academy that whose purpose really is to get people into a glimpse into the work of police officers so that we can build understanding and trust. And it seems to work pretty well.
Yeah. You mentioned crime rates have been dropping in the city. So what do you attribute the decrease to, and what are the plans to continue to lower that crime rate?
Yeah, so we've seen from 2014 through 16, which are the years we have data, the latest years, we saw a 33% drop.
Wow,
and
that's a lot.
And it's attributable to a number of things. We have a very effective police chief, whose orientation is toward community policing and, again, trust building, and less about rounding people up. We have now at our sort of district level police captains that are very engaged in the life of their neighborhood, the neighborhoods that they are responsible for. So again, building trust counts. It sometimes sounds cliched. It sometimes sounds when we talk about and sometimes hokey and maybe even downright soft. But it works when we build trust. We increase the flow of information and it leads to better outcomes.
What about gang activity? I know a lot of times people are reluctant to report something they may see or know about gang activity for fear of retribution. Where are you in regards to addressing
the
gang?
Yeah, so activity? Like every city, New Bedford's a city of 100,000. We have over the years there has been some gang activity, the way to deal with that is to stay on top of it. Again, we're in cities, and this is not us, but in cities where that have had problems with gang activity, what police departments fail to do is to take what I would characterize as a granular approach to crime fighting, which is to say that, in every city, most of the crime is attributable to a very small segment of the population. And knowing who the players are, knowing the relationships, matters an awful lot. So that when one person commits a crime against one gang, mm-hmm. those other gang members may be inclined to to carry out a reprisal, and it's nipping those things in the bud can go a long way. We've been good at it in New Bedford, and we really haven't seen much in the way of gang violence in a while now.
There's been a marked turnaround in the New Bedford school system. Test scores are up. Graduation rates are up. Much of that change came under the leadership of school superintendent Pierre Durkin, who resigned effective June 30th, citing major philosophical differences with some of the current and incoming school committee members. So what are the challenges then that face this next school superintendent?
Yeah, well, a lot of work has been done. When I got into office, our school system was in a bad way, right? So before I was in office, the scores were right at the bottom of the state. The 4-year graduation rate was 55%, and the state had placed New Bedford under formal monitoring. All that's changed. When I got into office, I said that the status quo is unacceptable. That New Bedford students deserve more out of their schools. So we went about the business of reform, which is not an overnight exercise. And so we brought in Pierre Durkin as a change agent, and much has changed. There are systems in place now where they didn't exist before. The school system is far more accountable than it was before in every respect. It's shown up on, all the usual scoreboards. The 4-year graduation right now is 71%, mm-hmm. Test scores have come up and quite significantly in certain of our schools, especially in the elementaries. And it's a school system that people have more confidence in now. But again, you know, we are some 5 years into this effort, and you know, we have a foundation in place, and now the next step, taking it to the proverbial next level, will entail building a culture of excellence in the school department. We've made all the technical fixes. Mm-hmm. We've put all the systems in place. Now we've led the horse to water. Now we've got to get the horse to drink, right? So we have to build a culture in which students want to come to school. Every student, every last one of them. Teachers feel engaged and feel validated in their work, and parents have confidence that our school systems will do right by their children. Mm-hmm. So I'm very confident that we're going to be able to pull that off. We're in the midst of a search right now, and you know, the feedback I'm getting is that the New Bedford opportunity is probably the premier one in the state right now.
You went through the public school system in New Bedford.
Well, not quite. No, I went to public schools, but we had moved from New Bedford to North Dartmouth, I went to Dartmouth High School. Yeah.
And what about your kids?
My two daughters are. My two eldest daughters are at New Bedford High, and my youngest one is at Keith Middle School.
Yeah. Does that change your perspective being a parent? And you know,
indeed, it does. No, I'm a big believer in public education. Look, I mean, my kids are doing very well in school. I'm proud to say they enjoy being in public schools, and I've been satisfied with the level of rigor that they've received an instruction in their time in school. And, you know, frankly, I wouldn't send my kids to our school system if I didn't think they would be, you know, set up for their futures.
There are several charter schools in New Bedford. So what are your thoughts about school choice?
I think, generally speaking, charters offer useful laboratory for, you know, new pedagogy and new governing models in schools, I think. I'm glad that we have charters in New Bedford. Some are good, some not. But more generally in Massachusetts, it's very difficult for cities to afford the bill. Mm-hmm. Charters do drain money from the existing school district and in ways that are, you know, difficult for cities to afford. I think it's just the reality of that and of charters these days. Charters are not funded the same in every state, and in many states charters are funded directly by the state. If that were the case in Massachusetts, I think you'd see more charters. I think you'd see a greater willingness on the part of mayors to see them open up. But by and large, our charters have a decent relationship with the district.
All right. Carl sends us an email, and he says, can you or the police force do anything about loud motor vehicles and especially motorcycles? It has gotten to the point that loud vehicles have just ruined outdoor life and being anywhere near the street. I can hear the motorcycles in New Bedford from miles away at all hours, day and night. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I think everybody would like to, you know, lower the noise in their neighborhood. I mean, it's hard to respond to that without knowing exactly where he lives. But, you know, in some places in my neighborhood, you can hear a pin drop, and mm-hmm. other places it's in more and denser parts of the city. It's a little noisier, but that's true in every city.
Are there noise ordinances? You know, there's some
there
cities
are.
I know,
yeah.
People try to rev up their cars and it gets.
Yeah, it's that way in every city, and the mm-hmm. police, you know, from time to time will enforce that. It's hard. You know, look, it's not like the police are out there with a decibel meter and saying, well, your motorcycle is 5 decibels over the limit, right? So, you know, we try to police take a common sense approach to such things, but we also know that in a city, things can be a little noisier.
We're talking with New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have a question for the mayor. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell, who just began his fourth term. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. There were plans for the New Bedford State Pier to become a staging platform for offshore wind development, and many Cape residents would love to see freight service to the islands go through New Bedford. Is the State Pier ready for this type of business?
The short answer is no, not even close. So the State Pier wasn't slated for offshore wind. It doesn't have the load capacity for offshore wind development. But the New Bedford State Pier, just by way of background, is an 8-acre parcel of waterfront land that was the site of the original whaling piers in New Bedford. And it houses two primary businesses. One is a cargo terminal, a break bulk cargo terminal, where we receive imports from North Africa, mostly clementines that are bound for Canadian markets, Mindy, of all things. So we have lots of citrus going through the city, which is a good thing in the middle of flu season right now. We also have our ferry terminal for the C Street ferries to Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket. As well as the ferry to Cutty Hunk as well, and there have been plans over the years to and that I have promoted that would take the unused front quarter of the State Pier, that is that area that is faces our downtown, and turn it into something that's, you know, more like what we see right out our window right here in Woods Hole, which is shops and restaurants that allow for a knitting of the downtown and the waterfront together. And I think there are multiple benefits of that approach. One is that it will, you know, I'll coin a verb here, unlandlock the downtown, which would be very valuable to New Bedford, but it also bring more people to the waterfront to observe what we do. You know, the biggest fishing port in America and a very active port that is about to become the leader in offshore wind in the years ahead. So those are the plans. However, if it were owned by the city of New Bedford, we would have gotten it done yesterday. It is controlled by the State Department of Conservation and Recreation, which is not in the port business. It's actually in the beaches and parks business. And so we've had very little movement in any direction, including the repairing of the structure of the pier. It's gotten the attention of the Steamship Authority over the years as a place where freight could be offloaded or loaded, I should say, onto vessels bound for the islands. In general, would that wind up, Mindy? I would like to see New Bedford play a part in taking trucks off of Cape Roads. It may or may not be at the State Pier. There are other places on the New Bedford waterfront that might be suitable. New Bedford won't stand to gain much out of it in terms of job creation. I mean, it's, you can imagine that it doesn't take a lot of people to assist trucks to just, you know, drive onto a boat. We're probably talking one or two jobs tops. But we do want to see, we do think that some of our peers could play a role in that, and we'll continue the discussion that we've been having with the Steamship Authority over the last couple of years on that matter.
Yeah. The fast ferry service between New Bedford and the Vineyard is in the summer. Does this ferry service have any benefits for the city? I mean, would it be a good thing to extend that season?
Certainly open to that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd be open to that. And the ferry service has done well. We've had roughly 100,000 passengers between the two ferries in the last couple of years. So we do gain some benefits from that. I mean, there is some, picture most people who, picture somebody from Manhattan going to, say, the Vineyard or Nantucket through New Bedford. They're probably not sticking. They don't stick around in New Bedford for that long. They park and they get on the boat as quickly as they can. But there are some people, there are some people who wander through the downtown and have lunch, but most people are in a hurry. I think it's all the more reason to build a larger restaurant footprint right next to the ferry terminal, because as we see right here, literally right out your window,
there are several choices.
There are lots of choices. Mm-hmm. And so, I think there's room for that in New Bedford as well without compromising the competitiveness of our maritime industrial sector.
Yeah. We're talking with Mayor John Mitchell. If you have a question or a comment, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You mentioned fishing. Fishing, a tough livelihood, especially given dwindling stocks and increased federal oversight. But the New Bedford fishing industry is getting another potential hit because of fisherman Carlos Rafael. NOAA is seeking to revoke 38 fishing permits as part of a civil action suit against Rafael, who's serving 46 months in prison for falsifying fishing quota, bulk cash smuggling, and tax evasion. So how could revoking Rafael's permits impact the New Bedford fishing industry, and what are the chances that that might happen?
A lot to digest there.
I know, right? Long question.
Yeah, I think so. Let me try to put the fishing industry, the state of the fishing industry, in some context. So as I think a lot of your listeners know, especially those in the New Bedford area, New Bedford is by far the largest commercial fishing port in the United States, and it's really the center of the industry on the East Coast. New Bedford's landings are 5 times larger than the next largest port on the East Coast, which is Stonington, Maine. And so just to give you, you know, the frame of reference, we have about 20 times the landings of the port of Boston. So, and it's only in the that market share is only getting larger as much of the East Coast fishing industry is drying up. You know, the ports, many longstanding commercial fishing ports up and down the East Coast don't have the landings to support all the other ancillary industries, the people who sell the ice mm-hmm. and the fuel and all the other stuff to fishing boats. So a lot of them are gravitating to New Bedford. We've seen a 67% increase in out-of-state vessels landing in New Bedford just in the last 3 years. There's a lot to talk about there, but I think mm-hmm. that context is important. The in general, the fishing industry in New Bedford is prospering. About 80% of our landings are scallops, which is the most profitable stock in America and probably in the world. But at the same time, our groundfish industry has contracted as it has up and down the East Coast. So, you know, it's within that context that, you know, this Carlos Rafael case mm-hmm. mattered, and there's, again, a lot to talk about there. But in general, the boats that are affected have landings that, by dollar value, would comprise about 5% of New Bedford's total landings. So the idea that this is, you know, that Carlos is... If Carlos were in any other American port, it would take down the port. In New Bedford, mm-hmm. it's not even, you know, it really isn't going to affect the port generally. The problem is that his affair has affected a lot of innocent people, the captains on his boats, the fuel company that supplies him the fuel, the net company that makes his nets, all those things. Those are businesses that run by law-abiding people who are, you know, taking it on the chin because of, you know, Carlos's skullduggery. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what I've tried to do, and I think, as you know, I was a federal prosecutor in Boston and Washington for a number of years and actually prosecuted some fisheries-related cases while I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston, so I can speak to these things. What we're trying to do is, you know, I've made clear, Carlos Rafael richly deserves a severe punishment. He's in federal prison now. But the folks that depend on his business, who played absolutely no role in the underlying fraud, don't deserve to be taken down. And it is in keeping with Department of Justice policy and the policy of every administrative agency that has enforcement responsibility in the federal government to avoid harm to people who, who don't deserve it. Mm-hmm. And that, so we've seen, you know, in cases involving defense contractors and big pharma, these companies that depend on permission from the federal government to do business, much like commercial fishing enterprises, that the government avoids the death penalty in those cases for the businesses because other people get hurt, right? Mm. So that my argument has always been that the commercial fishing industry, at least that part that's dependent on Carlos Rafael's landings deserves the same treatment.
Yeah. So where do we stand with those 38 fishing permits?
Well, right now, so the procedural posture is this. So the criminal case against him is largely done, although there's under appeal right now is a part of his sentence involving the forfeiture of certain of his vessels. There is an administrative piece involving the sector that his vessels operate in. The sector, NOAA closed that sector, and that involved another, I think, 23 of his vessels. And then there's another set of vessels that are subject to civil enforcement proceedings that NOAA brought recently. So my argument has been, that NOAA should pursue some sort of global settlement that wraps up all those cases and results in a strict punishment for Carlos Rafael, again, which he deserves, b, keeps the permits and therefore the landings in New Bedford by allowing for Carlos to sell the permits to others in New Bedford, and for him to use the proceeds to discharge whatever forfeiture or fine obligation he has to the federal government.
The schooner Ernestina Morrissey has long been a fixture on the New Bedford waterfront and has a long history with the people of New Bedford. She's currently undergoing restoration in Maine. Do you know, is the restoration on track, and will the schooner return to New Bedford in the future?
Inquiring minds want to know.
A lot of people are very fond of this ship.
And count me among them. I think the Ernestina Morrissey is among, you know, the most historically significant ships in U.S. history. I mean, you can put it right up there with the likes of at least the ones that have been preserved. Put it up there with old Ironsides and the Charles W. Morgan. It's had a fascinating history of Arctic exploration and U.S. immigration, being a packet ship, and it's in the Cape Verdean community in Bedford has a very strong affinity for it because it was, you know, the vessel that brought so many Cape Verdeans to the United States earlier in this century. So we certainly support the restoration of the Morrissey, and we would like for there to be an arrangement, perhaps with Mass Maritime, in which they would use the vessel as a training ship, and to have it docked in New Bedford in the summertime, where it could be visited and be part of our very active and vibrant waterfront. And so that's the goal. It is expensive to restore wooden vessels
and to maintain them,
and you have to keep them active, and you have to have they have to draw a revenue stream to keep it all going, and it's hard for the state, understandably, to keep every few years to cut a check to restore the thing. So there has to be a better business plan for the vessel in the long run, but hopefully we're getting to that point.
There's long been talk of South Coast Rail linking New Bedford to Boston. So what's the latest on that?
Well, it's been eventful on that front this week, where the state announced the release of a draft environmental impact statement for the so-called Middleborough route, which is geometrically speaking, not the most direct route to Boston, but it is certainly a far less expensive alternative than the preferred route, which would be through Stoughton. So I think I support the idea of getting it going. The Stoughton route is still years away. I think some people will take the train to Boston, not nearly through Middleborough, not nearly as many will through Stoughton. But it's what I've tried to emphasize over the years. This might seem heretical to some folks who followed the project, is that I'm all for it. I think having passenger rail service to Boston would be great, but it is far from an end-all and be-all for New Bedford. We're in the business of city building in New Bedford, and we go about that by accentuating our assets. That's the port and the work we're doing, not just in fishing, but in offshore wind. It's the growth of those industries into higher end knowledge industries. So we're pushing marine innovation as well. We're pushing the cultural front in our downtown, especially the very vibrant art scene in New Bedford. I mean, these are real assets that we're playing, and having I think the problem with South Coast Rail has been that both elected officials as well as certain folks in the media have allowed it to become an economic strategy unto mm-hmm. itself. In other words, if you just build the train, all will be well, prosperity will be ushered in. And that's not how economic development, regional economic development happens. It happens by a slow building of on top of assets, or I should say taking advantage of inherent assets over a long period of time. And that's how you become competitive. So the silver bullet approach to economic development doesn't work. The train to Boston is an asset among many, and that's we're promoting it, but it should be seen in that context.
Yeah. So it's a good thing, but not the only thing, is what you're saying.
Hardly the only thing.
Yeah. The former NSTAR plant has been eyed for a number of different development options, including a casino. What's the latest on that? I mean, we hear hearing casinos dead in New Bedford, and we hear no, maybe it's not. What are the thoughts?
I don't see a casino happening anytime soon, given the way that it's. It played out a few years ago, and again, you know, there's another instance where, you know, as much as I was, you know, open to an opportunity to bring a casino in under the right set of circumstances, it would not have been the end-all, be-all. And it's again, the silver bullet approach to economic development doesn't work. And the good news is that as recently as just in a couple of hours ago, when I drove by the NSTAR site, there's a lot of work going on to remediate the site, and we believe that that 28-acre site can be activated again in the next few years, perhaps for offshore wind development and for other uses. It's 28 acres. It's a great site, and it would allow us to be more competitive in certain maritime industries, and so that's the way we're looking at it. As recently as just this last month, Eversource moved out. So for the first time in about 150 years, there is no electric company on that site. Eversource moved its facility to our industrial park in our north end. And now they are spending a considerable amount of money cleaning up the site so that it can be reused either by an offshore wind company or somebody else. So it's being activated now, which is you know, something we've pined for a long time.
We're talking with New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell. 866-999-4626 is our number for your comments or questions. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Matt is giving us a call from Mattapoisett. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Go ahead. Would you have a question?
Yes. Forgive me if this has been addressed, but I wanted to talk about the parking or lack thereof in downtown New Bedford. And if there is a plan to add perhaps a parking lot or some kind of free parking down in that vicinity.
Okay. Good question. Thanks, Matt.
It is downtown New Bedford. Parking in downtown New Bedford is harder and harder to come by over the years, and that is a sign of our downtown's growth. I mean, it's a sign of the fact that, you know, we have a tremendous amount of number of restaurants now, and there is a real restaurant scene. It's really the center of the restaurant scene in southeastern Massachusetts. And, so we are now, because of that growth, we've undertaken a comprehensive parking study of our downtown and our waterfront to sort of sort out where additional parking should go and about pricing levels. And it's something that it's a good problem to have because, you know, if parking's at a premium, well, that means a lot of people want to go there.
Yeah, Matt, that's a good question. Thanks for calling, Matt. That's a good point, the pricing levels. Please don't price like Boston. Please don't do that.
We'd like to have that problem. you know, I, so let's just say, so we put quarters in the meter mm-hmm. right outside the studio. Where yep. you guys in Woods Hole are a little more expensive than New Bedford.
Is that right? Much time?
You know, four quarters for an hour here in Woods Hole, three in New Bedford.
So it's still the deal.
Yeah, so it's still a good deal.
New Bedford, you mentioned, has a very vibrant arts community, and you have a municipal arts fund.
Yes.
So why was the fund created, and what are some of the projects? This is the first one in the state, right?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah,
tell
we're
us
very
about
proud
it.
Of that. Yeah. I announced that that we would do that in my State of the City address a couple of years ago. But, you know, again, it's all part of our economic development strategy that I was getting at before. You know, you have to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative, as the song went, right? And so our economic development strategy is all about leveraging assets. And one of our assets, in addition to the port, in addition to the cultural institutions, is just the fabric of the art scene. And New Bedford has, according to none other than Richard Florida, writing for The Atlantic a few years ago, has the seventh highest per capita number of working artists of any city in the United States. Mm-hmm. So, and it isn't something that's just sort of come about of late. New Bedford has, you know, long been a place where artists have flourished because of the openness of the city, culturally speaking. And because, you know, from the earliest point of, during the whaling, height of the whaling industry, there were folks who patronized the arts, people with the means to do that. And there has always been a great art scene. We want to make more of it. And so what we did was we created a dedicated arts fund that is supported by revenue, hotel tax revenue. And so it's up and running, we're in the midst now of establishing a cultural plan for the city that will be completed in the next few months. And the idea there is to really try to channel funding to those activities that, will bring more artists into the city, more tourists, and allow artists to really flourish. Because, you know, we think that, you know, having a vibrant art scene will draw more visitors to the city. It's good for tourism, obviously, but it also makes us, you know, a neater place to live. And elevating the city's quality of life is one of our primary goals. We just, you know, being a nice place to live is, as much as that stating the obvious is really important. It's an end in itself, and it's also a means to, you know, more investment and more job opportunities.
The opioid addiction and overdose problem facing communities across the nation, New Bedford is no different than anywhere else, I suppose. So what are some of the ways that the city is addressing the addiction problem?
Yeah.
And then assisting individuals trying to find treatment?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it is, to my mind, the most vexing public health problem facing the United States today. And so cities across the United States are struggling with it. I mean, cities and non-urban areas are. I mean, look at, you know, some of the mm-hmm. The struggles that some of the communities on the Cape have had. A couple of years ago, we established a Greater New Bedford Opioid Task Force that is comprised of both government agencies in the region as well as the major nonprofits. To really get at the problem along multiple fronts. So, you know, there's a law enforcement element of it, of course, especially as fentanyl has proliferated in our city and other places, that we need to do everything we can to crack down on the distribution of fentanyl and interdict it. There is an educational component. We have woven into our health curriculum and in our schools and in grades as early as fourth and fifth grade, age-appropriate instruction on making the right choices. So we think that in the long run is going to work. I mean, the most important thing we can do is prevent people from ever ingesting opioids and having, you know, so that educational element, although it won't bear fruit for a while, is absolutely elemental and indispensable. We have worked very hard to to get folks into treatment. We don't have nearly enough options in that area, but that's certainly part of it. And some of it is just, so we've done it, but we've taken a couple of novel approaches. One of them is we have these things called clergy ride-alongs, where you know, a member of our faith community and a plainclothes police officer will go to addresses where there has been a recent overdose to try to intervene with the family to try to get, you know, at a minimum to give them a vial of Narcan just in case, but also to try to sensitize them to some of their service options. We know, I think it's been borne out, that the time to get to somebody is right in the wake of an OD and to get to their family members, because that's when they're most open to, turning down the right path.
With the purchase of Narcan, we saw those prices spike up for a while there. Has that had an impact, an economic drain on the department?
No, it hasn't. No, we were one of the first cities in the state to arm all of our first responders with Narcan. And if memory serves me, it's, you know, it ends up being about $20 a dosage. So it's not, you know, it's nothing in the big scheme of things.
Yeah. Maybe because you were the first. I think some of the other departments had much higher price tags.
Maybe they're accusing us of hoarding it. No.
I just talked to Mike, who's giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. I think you have a lot of great ideas. I have a question about the fisherman, Carlos Rafaela. Mm-hmm. He got 46 months in jail. And then you mentioned the pharma CEOs. I'm wondering how many of them have ever been charged for the part of the opiate crisis they're responsible for?
None to my knowledge, but you know what? It's certainly something that the federal government should be pursuing. At least there should be some great – I personally feel there should be some greater level of accountability on the part of Big Pharma in contributing to the opioid crisis. I mean, if you've – read Dreamland, which I commend to everybody, which is a very definitive chronicle of how we got to where we are with opioids. There's certainly a case to be made for complicity on the part of Big Pharma in the problem.
Right, Mike, thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So you recently got back from the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Mm-hmm. So what were some of the highlights?
Well, so I'm the chair of the Energy Committee at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and I'm also on the advisory board. It's been the conference has been a good platform for me to talk about New Bedford's leadership in renewable energy. I mean, as we've talked about before, you know, New Bedford has jumped in with both feet in the green economy. We have, according to the Wall Street Journal, we have, more installed solar capacity per capita than any city in the continental U.S. We have a larger fleet of electric vehicles in our municipal fleet than any community in Massachusetts. We've doubled recycling through our trash collection reforms. We have a lot of greatest hits in the area because we believe that being green is not only good for the environment, but it's also good to save taxpayer dollars and to create jobs. And we've been as effective as any city in America on that score. So, you know, and the topic, although, you know, with the change in presidential administrations, the emphasis on the part of the mayors isn't so much about climate change, even though that's there. We just know that's not necessarily a winning argument in the federal government these days. So we do try to emphasize, as we talk about renewable energy, emphasize things like grid security, grid reliability, right? Because we know that that's an area that the administration finds a little more appealing than talking about solar per se. And I have a different view from the federal government, but we also try to advocate for what we believe will work. So, but there's still a lot of running room, I think, for cities to develop renewables and to really play a part in mitigating climate change. And we're certainly, you know, at the bleeding edge of that in New Bedford, and we'll continue to be.
Yeah. What about infrastructure? I know you would like to see the New Bedford Fairhaven Bridge replaced, or at least
blown up.
So when you look at the infrastructure needs, are you hopeful that you'll get the, you know, money you need to do that?
Yeah, so that's something that we're constantly advocating for. The South Coast Rail project, I think, is the longer route it will move forward. It sounds promising. We've been spending a lot of time promoting dredging in the harbor. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be a serious port, you've got to dredge, right? Because harbors tend to silt up over time. The problem we've had in New Bedford over the years is that dredging hasn't happened because of contamination in the harbor, but that's being cleaned up now in a very significant way. So, you know, we're moving ahead with that. We're having some very promising conversations with the state and with the Army Corps of Engineers around dredging. We're trying, and with port facilities as well, what we're trying to do is, you know, as successful as the port of New Bedford has been, I believe that there is there's a lot of running room still. And, you know, we're trying to position ourselves as quickly as possible to become the leading offshore wind port on the East Coast. And we know that there will be ports in New Jersey and in New York that will be nipping at our heels in that way. And so we're trying to make the most of our first mover status. And that success in part will depend on whether we have suitable infrastructure for the industry as the industry starts to set up shop in the United States.
Right. When you were running for re-election, you had a goal of speaking to every New Bedford resident possible. And I'm just wondering, as you did you really get to every house you wanted to? And then what were the big things people said? I mean, what did you get from these folks as you were talking?
Yeah, I mean, being mayor is in part about it ought to be about sort of setting a strategic direction for the city and setting the agenda. That's what I try to do. But it also is, to be effective, you also have to be responsive to people. And so as we heard in, you know, a call earlier in the hour that someone who, you know, had issues with noise in neighborhoods, those are the things you deal with. And if you think you're above it, then you know, woe unto you if you want to run for re-election. But people also deserve responses, though. I mean, if you live in a community, you deserve to know that, you know, the basic services are going to be provided, whether it's filling potholes or trimming trees or anything else. And that's the way I see my job is to make people feel like they're getting their due from their tax dollars, and that they feel good about living in their community, and that delivering basic services is part and parcel of that.
Mm. Let me ask you quickly about the marijuana situation. Mm. You're asking to kind of hold off on that a little bit. Tell people why.
Well, the state is taking its sweet old time and coming up with and promulgating regulations, and before it all goes live, and there really isn't time for communities to come up with their own zoning ordinances that address where retailers should go. And so my feeling is that we should be calling time out and figuring out, you know, where these businesses should be sited. It's, you know, nobody wants to have, regardless of one's stance on legalization, nobody wants to have a marijuana shop next to their kid's school or, right, you know, or next to their church and or other sensitive sites.
Yeah. About a minute and a half left. For someone who hasn't been to New Bedford or hasn't visited in a while, what do you think might surprise them about the city?
Oh, where do I begin in the next minute and a half, Mindy?
Highlights.
Yeah, so the highlights. So, you know, we've had a lot of success attracting people to the brand new Harbor Walk and Cove Walk, which are just these spectacular public spaces, these trails that we built on our hurricane dikes, and with panoramic views of the ocean. They've been hugely popular. Our downtown is certainly vital now. We heard the one caller talking about parking. Again, there's a reason why it's hard to park in downtown New Bedford, because a lot of people want to go there now. It's safe. There's the Zeiterion Performing Arts Center is doing very well. The Whaling Museum and our other cultural venues are doing very, very well. And there's a new vitality to the city. We're in the business of building a great American city right now. And in an age in which, you know, major metros seem to suck up all the capital and talent, where we are cutting against the grain in New Bedford, and we're showing the rest of the country how to do it.
And just as Jessamine writes, hi, Mayor Mitchell, my husband and I chose to move our family to New Bedford 14 years ago. We love this city. We are so glad we found it and think you have done a fantastic job.
That is not a planted email, I swear, Mindy.
I don't think it is.
Thank you.
Mayor John Mitchell, thanks for coming in and talking with us. Always nice to see you.
Thanks for having me, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.